Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and since Donald Trump took office as president, immigration advocates all over the country have claimed there are more sightings of immigration and customs enforcement agents in courthouses looking to detain people. Citywide attention here was given to the issue after WNYC reported that ICE officials were lurking around human trafficking court, looking to make arrests there. The incident quickly became a rallying cry for attorneys and immigration advocates who say ICE's presence in courts is outrageous and want the city to do more to keep them out, especially in cases like human trafficking, where the people there are often seen as victims as opposed to perpetrators. At a rally last week, the New York City Council Speaker, Melissa Mark Viverito, addressed New York State's Office of the Court Administrator, which sets guidelines for all state courts.
So I call on them to defend the integrity of the court system and to take a position. And I don't think they're doing enough.
Here to talk about the uptick of ICE's presence in courts and what cities, including New York, can do about it is Beth Fertig, our senior reporter covering courts and legal affairs for WNYC. She was at the human trafficking court in Queens when ICE officers showed up, and Tina Luongo, attorney in charge of criminal practice at the Legal Aid Society, which represents the woman targeted by ICE officials at human trafficking court. Beth, always good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Brian. Good
and
to be here.
Tina, welcome to WNYC today.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Tina, there have been 38 arrests and attempted arrests at courthouses in New York State since the beginning of 2017. That's the number I'm seeing from the Legal Aid Society. How do those numbers compare to numbers from last year?
In 2016 total, through the whole state, there were only 11 arrests, 8 in New York City and 3 from upstate and Long Island. And in the entirety of 2015, there were only 14 arrests statewide, 11 in New York City and 3 upstate and on Long Island. So it's a huge uptick since 2017 has even begun.
And who are these people? Are they people who've been convicted of crime serious enough for deportation?
They are people who may have old convictions for things that are on the list, but they are also like our client in Queens who had no criminal history. They are people who are seeking asylum. They are people who are green card holders. They're people who have derivative citizenship because of children. It's not, you know, the tale that the ICE agents are simply coming into our courts and in our communities, taking away the quote, bad people is simply just fear-mongering.
Now, Beth, as you reported, immigration agents have been spotted in courts before, but until June 16th, nobody had ever seen them in the human trafficking part. Why is ICE's presence there particularly distressing?
Human Trafficking Intervention Court is a diversion type of court. There's one in each borough of New York City. The oldest one is in Queens, and 11 of them throughout the state. And basically what happens is people who have been arrested on prostitution-related offenses or illegally working as masseuses, there's a lot of that in Queens, they can have their record cleaned or cleared if they agree to counseling sessions with people who can try to help them. And the idea is to kind of steer them out of that business and not see them as criminals. So I just wanted to observe what was happening in the Human Trafficking Intervention Court in Queens, because it's the oldest one, as I said, and I just wanted to watch what happens there. I had asked if there had been any incidents with ICE because there are many immigrants in that court. And people said, no, we've never seen anything before. You know, maybe some people might be a little bit more hesitant to come these days, but there was no proof of that. And so as I was watching each person make their deal with the judge to, you know, come back in a few months, or they've just already, you know, finished their counseling sessions and they were about to have their records cleared if they stayed out of trouble for 6 months, there was this one woman who had completed her counseling sessions. She was about to just be released, you know, you're done, stay out of trouble for 6 months. And then all of a sudden, there was this kind of clustering of the attorneys and the judge. The judge had apparently told the woman's legal aid lawyer, ICE is here for you. And out in the hallway, the lawyers were all scrambling, trying to figure out what do we do for this woman, because there was, in fact, an agent outside the door of this courtroom. Nobody had ever seen that before in this particular courtroom. He was a young man. Two legal aid supervisors approached him to ask him what he was there for. He showed them his ICE badge under his T-shirt. The woman's cousin, who spoke English, was out there, and he tried to say, you know, what are you doing here? Why do you want my cousin? And the agent was like, listen, I'm sorry, I can't really talk to you. It is what it is. The cousin tried to talk to him for a while, saying, look, I have law enforcement in my family. I know it's your job. You know, can you please just tell me, what do you want with her? And, you know, there was not a lot this agent could do. But after, you know, seeing that they were in trouble, you know, if this agent was there for their client, the legal aid attorney asked the judge to set $500 bail, which allowed the woman to be kept in the back, although in handcuffs, to talk with her lawyer. And then about an hour or so later, the ICE agent disappeared, and they figured the coast was clear, and they asked the judge to release her, and they walked her across the street to the legal aid office, and then she went home with her family.
And she went home with her family.
Yeah.
So ICE did not get her.
No. But they did arrest three other people who were in the Queens Criminal Courthouse that day, not in the court, but outside the court. So all the lawyers there that day were saying, yeah, we've seen a few ICE agents here today. They're here for people throughout the building. You know, there's a lot of courtrooms in there. This is just one of many courtrooms in the courthouse. So they had obviously gotten people in other places in that court building. And ICE said to me, yes, we got these three people. They would not answer questions about this woman. I did not want to talk to them about, I didn't even have her name, to be honest, her full name. But I said, you know, what's your deal with human trafficking court? And basically they said, you know, their party line has always been, we're allowed in courts, they're public buildings. However, especially now that there are so-called sanctuary cities like New York, where police and jails are not turning over people that we want, then we are more likely to show up in a court to get them, because they know when somebody's got a court appearance. They've been fingerprinted if they were arrested. That goes to a federal database. They can track a case. They can ask the court officers, hey, what time is this person going to show up today? We know they're going to be here, and they can go. And so that's why there's this whole controversy now about should the city, or, you know, should the state office of court administration do something to prevent ICE agents from coming in these public buildings. And there's a big debate about that right now.
So, Tina Luongo from the Legal Aid Society, what would you add about ICE agents showing up in human trafficking court in particular?
I think they've sunk to a new low, clearly. And, you know, in this particular circumstance, as Beth had said, this was where someone was coming for assistance and help. The district attorney and the court were about to actually dismiss her case because she had gone to programming to help her sort of get on a new path in life. And had we not asked for bail, she would have been in deportation proceedings right now. And I sort of want to pause for a moment for you and your listeners to understand what it means, right? So in essence, what we are saying, we've done this now in another case in the Bronx, in order to protect our clients who are out in the community, have been coming to court three or four times under a court mandate to come to court, and they have been. They are safer if we ask for bail and they go to Rikers Island than if they are released and go into deportation proceedings, because the city has a detainer law that says to the federal government and to ICE, we won't turn someone over unless you give us a federally issued federal judicial warrant issued by a judge that says that judge has vetted the information to be correct, and that judge is ordering this court to hand the person over or
and
this
can
correction
the, can,
facility.
Can the city or the state enforce that warrant required standard?
We are hoping that is what the city and state will do, that they apply. One of the recommendations is to apply the law already in effect for Rikers and NYPD to our court system, and that first and foremost, lawyers be notified. In many of the cases in the in the case, all of the cases that we have seen throughout this state, many of the attorneys are not even being notified by court staff that ICE is there. We are very lucky for this young woman that the judge in that court alerted her, the attorneys, because had the judge not, we're not sure the court officers would have, or court staff. So many times what happens is our clients go up with us, they're released, so after their case is done, they leave the courthouse to go back to their families, their jobs, their communities, and ICE is waiting. And at that point, there's nothing we can do. Much like the silence that, or the no answers that Beth got, or our lawyers get, we get that every time. So we know nothing about whether what the underlying claim of ICE is to take the person. We don't know where the person will be ultimately sent, because there are three detention centers, one upstate, two in New Jersey, and so there's not an automatic right to counsel for people who are detained. So the due process is much slower, and fortunate for us, we have the NIFOP program, but until that lawyer is connected to that person isn't given answers. Their family wouldn't know. So it's a real problem. So we're asking for notification, and at a minimum, a judge in our courts should vet another judge's judicial warrant to make sure the information is correct. In many instances, ICE is acting on old or erroneous information to execute a removal.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I asked their spokesperson in New York, you know, what is your policy with these intervention courts or diversion courts? You know, what do you do when it's human trafficking? And the woman there gave me, it was kind of vague, but she said, we do note when it's somebody who is a victim, an immediate victim. And, you know, so it wasn't really clear if that meant they would back off. But for whatever reason, this person had come to their attention. They always say that it's a targeted enforcement. They're not just there to do some raid. But they also claim that they're taking note if it's a victim and that they may qualify for, you know, certain types of relief, you know. So I'm not really clear what the straight policy is with this.
WNYC's Beth Fertig, our courts reporter, and Tina Luongo, who is the attorney in charge of criminal practice at the Legal Aid Society, following up on Beth's revelation that ICE agents are showing up in human trafficking court in search of people they may deport. And you know what, Tina, I'm glad you're here, and Beth, you too, because I want to get your reaction to some breaking news coming across right now. And I hope everybody's sitting down, because the Supreme Court is letting the Trump administration enforce its 90-day ban on travelers from six mostly Muslim countries, overturning the lower court orders that blocked it. That ruling just down from the Supreme Court. We'll talk to our Supreme Court watcher, Ellie Mistal, in just a few minutes. But Tina, since you work at Legal Aid, my understanding is that the court is accepting the larger case on the merits of the travel ban, whether it's constitutional or not. But while they're hearing the case, rather than have an injunction against the enforcement of the ban, which is what the lower courts put in, the Trump administration is going to be able to start to enforce it. And I think, based on the arguments as they were submitted, that'll take effect immediately. Tina, is this in Legal Aid's purview?
Obviously it is. It affects our immigration law unit was out at Kennedy helping families, and we stand with the families here that are waiting for their loved ones. Or, by the way, people who are here, working here legally, have families here, have jobs here, have children here, who went, traveled abroad, and now is trying to come back home, and they can't. So we obviously stand there, and we think the 90-day ban obviously is wrong to continue it and allow it to now happen. It's going to break apart families. And so ultimately, we hope that the court agrees that the ban is unconstitutional, but certainly to allow the 90 days now is certainly not a decision we would agree with, and we're going to continue to fight to protect people.
And just to clarify and actually correct something that I said a minute ago, the Trump administration has announced, or at least Trump said last week, that the ban would take effect 72 hours after being cleared by the courts. So not this minute, but pretty much 3 days from this minute, if the president's statement from last week stands. Beth?
Wow. Well, I'm just thinking about all the people out there who may need to travel and who may have already made plans. Like, it's summer right now. There might be college students, professors, New York City public school families who have gone back to these six countries or were expecting somebody to come from these six countries during the summer. So it could cause a lot of disruptions there. I predict, you know, in 72 hours, we'll see a lot of attorneys descending at Kennedy Airport to see if anybody has been held back wrongly, and maybe some more legal challenges for all we know. I'm also curious about how it's going to affect the refugees, because they had been allowing refugees to come in the meantime. And
that's true. It was also a total suspension of the refugee program while they were figuring out what they were going to do with it over the 90 days.
But then they did
days.
Allow the refugees. Because so now it will be
banned
again.
Well, because it was overturned, yes.
Right. So you may have people in transit planning to come here as refugees who are now going to be blocked.
Tina, how much does the 72 hours mitigate the potential damage to people who are either in transit right now or were, you know, out of the country thinking it was safe and who are living in the United States and want to come back? I think I remember what happened in January when they first tried to impose the ban. Was it was just whoosh and it takes effect right now, and people were stopped literally in mid-travel and things like that. Now they're saying, okay, 3 days. How much does that mitigate the instantaneous effect on people who may be American legal residents and come back? I guess another thing that I'll throw onto this is that the revised version of the travel ban does exempt people with green cards, which the original version did not, even if they're from the six countries. So what would you say about the 72 hours?
Well, let's hope that people can change their flights, right? If first and foremost, and look, the obviously the exemption for green card holders will help, but think about all the people who are not going to be able to change their tickets, who need to rely on get permissions to and had a travel date, or are traveling and simply can't move the date, or the airlines, and we saw this a little bit when the initial bans happened. The airlines start to respond to the pressures of the federal government, and they have to be ready, willing, and able to move tickets. And then what about the fees? Many of our clients scraped by every bit of savings to get to see their family or travel, and so now when they come back, if there are exorbitant fees to make those changes, that's going to actually be inhibited. So let's hope people can change their tickets, but if they can't, then the 72 hours does very little.
And we're going to get more details on this in just a minute in the news with Shamita Basu and Ellie Mostaler, legal analyst. Beth, the last word on your story about ICE now showing up in courts in New York City, including even human trafficking court, where people like the defendant you were describing are seen domestically as much as victims as they are as criminals.
The city council is going to have a hearing on Thursday on this very matter, and I expect we're going to be hearing some more ideas, and they're going to be pressing the state's chief judge or some other official from the Office of Court Administration on what, if anything, they can do. I will say, Brian, that there is no state that has banned ICE from their courthouses. They have written to the Justice Department. They have, in fact, the Office of Court Administration in New York has met with ICE officials about this, but there is no clear-cut policy anywhere where they have said, we are not letting ICE in. It's tough to do when these are public buildings. But as Tina Luongo and others are saying, there may be some creative solutions to that, and that's what we're going to hear about on Thursday.
WNYC's Beth Fertig, Tina Luongo from the Legal Aid Society, thank you both.
You're welcome.
Thank you.